Schindler's List is a movie about the Holocaust. It's a movie about Oskar Schindler. He's a wartime profiteer, a womanizer. In old language, we would call him also a boozer. And he's also a member of the Nazi Party. He's the most unlikely person that you and I could choose to be a hero in this movie. And yet, for unspeakable reasons, maybe even for himself, he becomes obsessed with saving Jews from sure and certain death in Nazi concentration camp ovens. He's absolutely obsessed with saving lives. And so he goes about his business in a very dark and foreboding time. The darkness of Schindler's List is represented in the face and the actions of a young commandant who's inhumane, who sees his sport sitting on his porch shooting Jews down in the yard of the concentration camp. He has the face of what you and I might call a fallen angel. The movie's dark and heavy, full of evil and violence. And yet there are moments of hope in the middle of this dark film. It's represented in the symbol of the girl with a red dress. You see, the movie that Steven Spielberg put together is made in black and white. And infrequently during the movie, there are flashes of color. They're like little flames of hope in the middle of a dark and foreboding period. And it's represented by a girl, a little girl in a red dress. She flashes across the screen, sometimes at the most chaotic and confusing moments. But it's the girl in the red dress that gives hope in the midst of the actions of Oskar Schindler. The girl in the red dress raises the questions of Easter season. Is death the last word? Is there more to life than just the routine of what we exist every day? Like the death camps that this movie portrays, is there just a big old period at the end of our life? Or is there something more? In the flickering color of the little girl's red dress, you and I are given a vision of what could be more. Now make no mistake, the darkness of Easter season began back in Holy Week when Jesus of Nazareth was taken to a cross, brutally murdered in a Roman execution. It was so brutal, the Carthaginians outlawed it after the fall of the Roman Empire. The disciples that were following Jesus saw that as a dead end, a big period at the end of their life. They saw in this rabbi a great hope. His followers believed he was the Messiah, the one that Israel was expecting. But when he was brutally murdered, they saw it as an end, a big old period. I wonder, is there anyone here today who's had some chapters of life like that, where you ran into some confusion, some lack of clarity, some gray periods when you're not sure where you're going to go next, when a vocational aspiration was dashed or a relationship broke, or when something went awry? You felt like there's just a period at the end of my sentences. Do Jesus of Nazareth comes along in resurrection and begins to look like that flickering red dress. You'll remember the risen Christ meets up with the disciples in all kinds of varieties of ways. And he begins to remove that period at the end of their sentence and replaces it with a comma. More life, new life, resurrected life. The risen Christ does the same for us, removing those big periods and replacing them with comma. More life, resurrected life. One of our daughters, who's funny as a duck, gave me a t-shirt a few years ago. She found it in Lake Tahoe, for heaven's sake. And the first depiction on the t-shirt are two bears, hungry-looking bears. They're at a dining table, and there's a little goofy boy in the middle of them named Bob. Go figure. And the caption reads, "Let's eat Bob." The bears, of course, speaking, "Let's eat Bob." And then the next caption underneath the next scenario has the same bears. Bob is looking much more enlightened and happy in that depiction. And it says, "Let's eat, comma, Bob." And the t-shirt is titled, "The Comma Saved Bob." The Easter comma saves us. It comes alongside of us as a flickering hope. Jesus meets up with his disciples then and now, and he gives them three assurances. Three assurances. The first you'll notice in all of the Easter narratives is that Jesus comes to them. They don't come to Jesus. The risen Christ is the initiator. He meets up with Mary outside the empty tomb. He meets up with the other women. He meets up with two disciples as they walk towards Emmaus. He meets up with Peter on the beach. He meets up with all kinds of assorted people. He initiates with us. We do not have to find God. God finds us. God initiates with us, finds us at the end of our sentence with a period, and wants to say, "I've got good news for you." I'm going to change that to a comma. You'll remember the most famous story Jesus told, the prodigal son. The young boy goes away in what was called loose living to a far country. He comes to himself, decides he wants to return home. He begins to practice the recrimination that he expects. And yet, it says, Jesus telling this story says, when the boy was still at a distance, the parent, the father, runs out to greet him. Runs out to greet him. Doesn't wait for him to come home. Puts the family ring on his finger. Kills the fatted calf. But it doesn't end there. There's another son in the story you'll remember, the old sulking brother. He's out on the back porch, we would say in the South, sulking. Jesus goes out to him as well. He initiates with the older boy and says, "Everything that I am and have is yours." You know how sweet it is that God's love finds us, seeks us out, comes to us. That's the model of ministry that you and I are given in resurrected glory, that we are to go out to others, to initiate with them, to be sent forth. Jesus initiates and finds them behind locked doors on a sandy beach on the way to Emmaus. There's a second assurance that Jesus gives in resurrected glory, and that is everyone he finds, then and now, he offers the gift of forgiveness and restoration. They all needed it. We all need it. They needed it badly. That group, his followers, they ditched him. They denied him. They disowned him. They ran. He had good reason to shake his bony finger at them. What he does instead is offer grace, forgiveness, restoration. 2 weeks ago, we heard the story about how he restored Peter on the beach. He asked Peter, "Do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He restored Peter to full community life, to be a child of his, to be an ambassador. I still remember Henry Nouwen, the great Roman Catholic theologian and writer, visiting my divinity school when I was a senior. We were all eager, waiting to be ordained, all sitting there fresh-faced. And I remember him leaning over the pulpit that morning, looking at all of us who were ready to be ordained. And he asked us, "Do you love Jesus?" We thought, "Well, yes. That's why I'm in divinity school." But he went on. I have quotes because it's on tape. He went on to say, "If your answer is yes, then your life will be spent in tedious meetings. It will mean encountering parishioners who are challenging. It will mean meeting up with anxious hearts, people with significant doubts. You'll encounter people who hate the church, and they hate you because you're a priest of the church. It will mean going the extra mile, staying the extra hour, going out of your way for another person, having your heart torn in two, especially when you have to bury children and those who've committed suicide. It will mean sticking your neck out on some very important topics. And it will mean keeping your mouth shut on some very important topics. It will mean serving the least in the world, supporting and encouraging those who've been left out and left behind. It will mean that you are to love everyone, no matter their dress, their race, their gender, their orientation, or their politics. Because, he said, if you love Jesus, that's who you are to love. No exceptions. Gulp. All of us aspiring priests swallowing hard as Henry Nouwen asks us, do we love Jesus and what it's going to mean? But he went on. And when you don't love like Jesus, then Jesus will come alongside of you like he did the disciples of old and offer you forgiveness and full restoration. He will give you a new start. Because that's what the gospel is. It's a new start, he said, every single morning. Whew. We all took a deep breath of relief. Jesus gives the disciples a third assurance. He gives them all something to do. Notice in all of the Eastern narratives, he doesn't invite any of us to sit idle. He doesn't invite them to just bask in the glory of resurrection, sing wonderful hymns and have beautiful flowers in Easter, put on your new seersucker suit and wear your new stole. No. He sends them out. He gives them things to do, important work to do, to heal and baptize, teach, and reaching out to the lost, the last, and the least. When Reynolds Price, a great novelist, was dying of cancer, He was in a dark place, a foreboding chapter in his life. He didn't see any hope. He saw a big period at the end of the sentence of his existence. But one day he had an awareness that his question needed to change. It was as if a girl with a red dress wandered through his hospital room. He began to change his question from "Why me?" to "What's next?" What's next? Last year, I was traveling through a busy urban airport, the kind of afternoon that you and I just disdain. Packed hallways everywhere. It was one of those airports where you have to get on the tram, like the bus tram, to drive out to the plane. Those are fun, aren't they? This place was packed, full of people, wall to wall, shoulder to shoulder. We were getting on one of the trams. I looked into the tram. There was one little seat left. It was between two people that didn't look like it fit my body. You know how you kind of look and say, that's going to be difficult. So I'd shimmy myself into the seat. You know, you can't help but kind of rub shoulders a little bit with people when you do that. There's luggage everywhere. So I shimmied down, and on my way, next to me was a young man. I skirted his leg, but there was a noise that didn't sound like flesh. There was a thump, and he and I recognized that I heard this thump. And he said, "Yes, it's a prosthesis." We had some time, and he wanted to talk. He said, "I was a small college All-American tennis player at William & Mary several years ago, destined to be on the tour. I was a rising star," he said. "I decided to go to Afghanistan and serve my country before I went on the tennis tour." He said, our Humvee was struck by a landmine, a bomb that went off, and I lost my left leg. I thought my life was over," he said. "There was nothing to live for. My whole life was to be on the tennis tour. That was my destiny." He didn't say it, but he could have. That was a big old period at the end of his sentence. Said, "What happened next?" He said, "I went to a second chance church." That's what he called it. "I thought, I hope some Episcopal churches could have that as their second name." He went to a second chance church and he began to hear about grace and forgiveness and restoration. He said, "Last year I started a tennis camp for disabled children. Children from all over the United States come to my tennis camp. Some have lost limbs. Some cannot use their hands. Some do not have legs. We're all sorted in conditions of people with prosthesis and hands that are missing. But we get out on the tennis court for a whole couple weeks of tennis camp." "How'd it go?" I asked him. "Fabulous," he said. "We're going to have double the attendance this year." I said, "What's next?" He said, "I am doing my life's mission. What started as a fallen face," when he began to talk about his story, "the face of a fallen angel, was now lifted and was the face of a resurrected child of God who was telling me about his new mission." So I asked myself and us this morning, what's next? You and I are called to love and serve as Jesus loved and served us. He gives us three assurances this Easter. He comes to us. He forgives us and restores us to our full dignity. And then he sends us to do important things. Sometimes they're right in front of us. Sometimes they're right around the corner. Sometimes they're in our household or at work. Sometimes they're a world away. Sometimes they're right down the street. You know, it doesn't matter about the size, and it doesn't matter about how many people. It matters that you and I open up our heart and set our feet and hands to work for the sake of others. Because you and I do not have a period at the end of our sentence. The resurrected Christ removes that period and puts in its place a comma. More life, new life, resurrected life. Amen.